Good morning, boys and girls. It is Friday, August 25th, 2017, and we are one day away from the Green Bay Packers setting foot in Colorado for their third exhibition game of this training camp season. They will play the Denver Broncos, of course, in what is traditionally the most important of the exhibition games, if you want to look at it that way. And that's because this third game is traditionally when the starters on offense and the starters on defense play their most snaps of the entire training camp. And so typically that's somewhere between one quarter and one half of the game. Aaron Rodgers will be out on the field this weekend, Jordy Nelson, etc., etc., etc. So it's your last chance to get a look at these guys before the start of the regular season, because in the fourth exhibition game, just about all the starters, all the important players, will either not play at all or they'll be on the field for a series at most in order to avoid injury before Week 1 against Seattle. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. Thank you for making it through another week of our daily training camp format. We'll have one more week of this next week, and then after that, we'll start into our regular season schedule, which I think is going to be 3 days a week. Definitely the day after every game, definitely the Friday before every game, and then once a week during the middle there, in that middle segment. I just don't know exactly which day of the week it's going to be. So for today's podcast, I decided to do something a little bit different with the format. Rather than taking questions, rather than breaking down a position, I wanted to focus a little bit on guys that either had the most to gain or the most to lose from this third exhibition game against stiff competition for probably an entire half. And so let's just go down the list here. And, you know, the first name that popped into my head was punter Justin Vogel. And I know some of you might be thinking, what? How does a punter have a lot to gain or lose in, you know, the third exhibition game? There's one left. There's plenty of time. Well, if you think back to last season, it was after this third exhibition game that general manager Ted Thompson made the decision to release Tim Maste, the longtime veteran. And then they claimed Jacob Shum on waivers. And he was in here in time for the fourth exhibition game against Kansas City, and he did well enough to keep the job, and so he rolled into the regular season. So I think this is a really big night for Justin Vogel on Saturday. This is a guy who has a tremendously strong leg, as we've seen all throughout training camp. When he gets a hold of it, he can really boom the ball with tremendous distance that pushes close to 60 yards, and his hang time, you know, feels like an eternity in certain situations. He has been better in practice than in games, I would say. I think that if you look at the first exhibition game, he was pretty solid. If you look at the game against Washington last week, he struggled a little bit. Numbers-wise, he was fine. You know, you look at the net, you look at the average, you look at his punts inside the 20, those were all fine. But where he really struggled was hang time, and that is essentially what cost Tim Maste his job in certain regards. The Packers weren't necessarily displeased with his distance or the amount of yards the Packers were giving up on returns, which can, you know, be due in part to whatever the punter has done on a particular snap. But he just wasn't kicking the ball high enough. He wasn't allowing the coverage team to get down there on a consistent basis to the point where the Packers felt comfortable hemming in each punt return guy, whatever that player might be from the other team. And so I think this is a huge opportunity for Vogel to sort of reinforce all of his positives and try and build on what was a little bit of a questionable game against Washington. If he can do that, I think he'll buy himself a fourth exhibition game. And then at that point, he's done everything he can do. It's up to the front office, the coaches, to make their decision. And whether or not he's here for the 53 is out of his control at that point. So I think this is a really important night for Justin Vogel. He's the only specialist that I think is really under pressure, you know, against Denver. I know that there's two long snappers with Derek Hart and Brett Goud, but I mean, I guess Thompson could release one of those guys going into the last game, but I don't really see the point there. You know, it's not a situation where, you know, Brett Goud needs a ton of work or Derek Hart needs a ton of work. You know, Goud is a veteran. Hart has been here all summer, all spring. So I think that will probably go right down to the wire in terms of, you know, the one-on-one competition. And as I've said on this podcast before, I think Brett Goode wins that job. I know that Derek Hart has been here, you know, all spring, all summer. He's been working really hard. I just think at the end of the day, you got to go with what you trust. And they trust Brett Goode a lot. And that's why he was here for a decade. So let's move on to defense. I think this is a really important game for Ladarius Gunter. Gunter is right now battling between the fifth and the sixth cornerback spot for the Packers. You look at that depth chart top to bottom. Of course, you've got Devon House, number one. Then you've got Demaryius Randall and Quentin Rollins, you know, splitting or fighting for two and three. Kevin King, number four. Josh Hawkins, I think, has taken a big step forward to number five. And then you look at Gunter, the sixth guy that is, I don't know if he's necessarily fighting for his life, because I think that there's a pretty good chance the Packers keep six cornerbacks, but I think that he's in a difficult position right now because he just doesn't really have a big role at this point. He doesn't have a defining niche, if you want to call it that, within this defense. And so if he can put together one more really good game playing in the slot, which is sort of his new home in the second half of training camp, I think that goes a really long way toward solidifying his place in the minds of defensive coordinator Dom Capers and cornerbacks coach Joe Witt Jr. Because to date, he's been pretty steady in the slot. I think perhaps exceeding the expectations of a number of writers, you know, myself and colleague Tom Silverstein included. And so if he can do it again, I think that would show them that they can choose to have a different element at that slot position if they want to on any given week. You can have Demaryius Randall, the athletic, fast blitzer. You can have Quentin Rollins, who might be a little bit better of a cover guy. You can have Ladarius Gunter, who's a physical presence, who's long, who's tall, who can jam guys at the line of scrimmage. So they would have three distinct options at that slot position on a week-to-week basis. And I think that that is something that probably appeals to Capers and Joe Witt, because they have gotten in the habit of playing matchups a lot lately. And the more versatility you have, the more different guys you can choose from, the better you can be from a matchup standpoint. So I think this is a big game for Gunter, because he's going to be going against good competition probably in the second quarter, or certainly in the third quarter. He'll be facing the twos at that point from Denver. And that's a good opportunity for him to show what he can do. Sticking on defense, I look at a guy up front, Christian Ringo. This is a great chance for him to build off of what was a very, very solid game a week ago against Washington. Ringo is kind of that forgotten defensive lineman because, of course, everybody talks about Mike Daniels, everybody talks about Kenny Clark, and everybody talks about Dean Lowry. Then, of course, there was the new guy on the team, Ricky Jean-Francois. And that's another face that sort of obscures Ringo a little bit. Ringo was on the 53-man roster last season. He played at times, but there were also a number of games where he didn't play. Sometimes he was inactive. And I think that with Lowry still recovering from this knee injury, I expect that Ringo's going to get a good bit of playing time this weekend. And so I thought he showed up very well as a pass rusher last week in Washington. He got, I think, two hits on the quarterback and disrupted, you know, a couple of plays there by getting into the backfield quickly. And if he can do that again, I think it bodes well for him within the context of making the 53-man roster again, because defensive line is a position that I think the Packers could go light on if they wanted to. With as much nickel and dime as they play and as little base as they play, they're essentially only having two defensive linemen on the field for 80 to 85% of their snaps. And so traditionally, what was a position where you needed tons of depth because you were playing three at a time in a base 3-4 defense, that's not necessarily the case anymore. And so I think the Packers could dip as low as five defensive linemen if they wanted to. I still think they're going to go with six. But I think Ringo is really fighting it out with Brian Price for the last spot there. And so for Ringo, a guy that was on the 53 last year, I think this weekend's game could be paramount. You know, the linebacking core is an interesting one for me, both inside and outside. Let's start inside. Blake Martinez is a guy that, coming into last season, he had all the fanfare surrounding him about how smart this guy was, about how quickly he picked up the defense, about how he was able to wear the play-calling headset, you know, from basically the first day he got here, which is unusual for rookies. And then the regular season came, and He played okay until, you know, the first week, first 8 weeks of the season, maybe 9 weeks. Then he hurt his knee, and then when he came back, he was kind of not really the same and didn't really figure into the defensive lineup as much. He was used almost exclusively on special teams late in the year. Coming into camp this season, he had kind of lost his place a little bit. You know, Joe Thomas had sort of stepped forward as a leader at that inside backer position. Then, of course, you had Josh Jones and Morgan Burnett taking reps away from Martinez and Jake Ryan. But over the last week or so, I think Martinez has come on pretty strong. I think he played very, very well against the run in Washington. And that is a huge boon for him if he can do it again against Denver. Because, you know, Jake Ryan has the reputation of being the best run stopper on this team when it comes to the inside backers. And I still think that's probably true. But if Martinez can show that he can stop the run, it gives the coaches more chances to put him on the field. Whereas if he could not really stop the run and struggled in coverage the same way he did last year, he becomes a guy that is very easy to replace in certain situations. I thought Martinez had a very strong game against the run, as did this entire Packers defense last week. But even Clay Matthews mentioned that he thought Martinez fit the gaps really well. He was showing up in the hole when he needed to be there. He was in the right place at the right time, playing physical, getting his nose in there. And I thought it was a very strong showing for him from a run standpoint. If he does that again, it'll really show the coaches that they can trust him in those situations, and it could earn him more playing time on the field in a year when the traditional inside backers, meaning Martinez and Jake Ryan, are fighting for every rep they can get as Josh Jones and Morgan Burnett play more and more and more. Shifting to the outside position, I think Reggie Gilbert is a guy that could look at this game as the deciding factor in whether or not he makes the roster. You know, we've talked a number of times about the thinness at the outside linebacker position. Of course you have Clay Matthews, of course you have Nick Perry, and then behind that, it's essentially, I don't know what to call it, it's kind of gone haywire, honestly. You know, Jaron Elliott had sort of stepped forward a little bit as the number three guy. I think that he had taken significant strides in the running game. I've noticed him showing up there more, being more stout, which is what the coaches want from him. But then he drops out of practice both days this week with back spasms. He drops out of the first practice on Tuesday, comes back Wednesday morning, starts the practice, drops out again with back spasms. Now, a back is one thing that you certainly don't want to mess with, you know, before the regular season for a guy that you're going to be counting on, you know, in a number of ways. Not only is Elliott going to be playing a lot from scrimmage, but he's going to be a core special teams guy once again, just as he has been every season in his career. And so, if you start talking about back problems with a guy that's that important, that can get pretty dicey. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they held Elliott out this weekend, you know, for precautionary reasons, because they know what he's about. He's been here long enough. He's been in the system for enough years where they know what they're going to get out of him. The guys that they don't know a ton about in terms of being thrown into the fire against really, really good competition for an extended period of time are Kyler Fackrell, Jaron Elliott, and Jonathan Calvin. So I'll go through that list really briefly. Fackrell is not in any danger of missing the 53-man roster. He is a lock. He is going to make the team. But for him, he needs to get a little confidence going before the start of the regular season, because he's going to be out there a ton of snaps every game. And right now, I just don't think he has a lot to go off of in his own mind where he can say, all right, I'm going to go out there and I know this is going to work regardless of the opponent, or I know that I can rely on this move every week because it's advanced enough that it gives guys trouble. I just don't think he has a lot of confidence right now because he's not winning a lot of his one-on-one matchups. So if he can win a little bit against Denver, if he can build a little momentum going into the final game, I think that'll be huge for him. And when it gets to the regular season against Seattle, he won't be going out there coming off what has really been a disappointing training camp. He would instead be going off an uptick. And I know that that might sound silly because these guys are pro athletes. They should be able to deal with these things, but they're people. You know, they hear the things that are said about them. They read the things that are written about them, and they just know when they're not playing well. And I think that's got to be the case for Fackrell. He has to know that he's not playing very well and that he needs to take it to a different level. Now let's go to Reggie Gilbert. Gilbert was on the practice squad last year. He was an undrafted free agent from Arizona. Clay Matthews has been really high on this guy, said that he was one of the most improved players on the practice squad last season. I've heard the same from a number of the offensive linemen that he's gone against. And with Jaron Elliott potentially not playing, and I don't think he's going to play, this is an enormous opportunity for Gilbert because he's going to get reps opposite Fackrell with the second team defense, and he's going to play a lot. And I think he played well against Philadelphia. I think he played well against Washington. And if he could string together another good performance, I think there's a really good chance he could make this team because you talk about Matthews, Perry, Fackrell, Elliott, Beagle. Those are your guarantees in terms of players that are going to be here this year. And not only did the Packers keep at least six outside linebackers in recent years, but they've played six outside linebackers in recent years because last year, Fackrell was number six. It was Matthews and Perry, Jones and Peppers, and then Fackrell and Elliott. And he got on the field for 100 and something snaps. So I think Gilbert has a chance at that six linebacker position. Now, if they decide to keep six, he's battling with Jonathan Calvin, an undrafted rookie this year from Mississippi State. I think there's no doubt that Gilbert is ahead of Calvin playing from scrimmage, and that's due largely to experience. But Calvin is a better special teams player than Reggie Gilbert. He's got a knack for blocking field goals. He's a big body. He's built differently than the other outside backers that are competing for spots on this team. And so if he can show that he is a valuable special teams player, that will be his biggest boost when it comes to a head-to-head competition, if you will, against Reggie Gilbert. So that's a guy to keep an eye on this weekend because he should get a good number of reps as well. Let's stick with one more player on defense, but let's go to the safety position. And I don't really know if this guy deserves to be on this list because I think he's going to play a lot against the Rams in the last exhibition game, but I'm kind of interested in safety Jermaine Whitehead if he's able to get on the field. Whitehead has been battling a hip injury that he suffered prior to the Washington game. He was able to play in Washington, but he dropped out, and then I don't think he practiced at all this week. So I think there's a chance that he won't play this weekend, and that's kind of why I think he's going to play a ton against Los Angeles if he's healthy. But he's a guy that I don't really know what to think of him from scrimmage. I haven't seen too much positive or negative. I mean, I've seen him get beat a few times, and then I've seen him play physically and deflect a pass here or there. So I think from scrimmage, for me anyway, it's kind of a wash. But he shows up on the first unit of a few special teams, and that's really a pretty good indication of what the coaches think of him, at least in that capacity. If they're putting you with their first stringers on various special teams units, that means they think you have a chance to play, because if you don't have a chance to make the roster, they're not putting you out there with the starters, and he's been out there a couple times. So, again, I think there's a pretty good chance that he won't play this weekend because of that hip injury, and if he doesn't, he's certainly going to get a chance to play a lot against Los Angeles. So either this Saturday night or next week is a huge chance for Whitehead, because if he has great special teams performances, he could start to maybe be one of those guys that is at least discussed in the same type of a category as Jeff Janis. And I don't mean that they're the same level of special teams player. Jeff Janis is an exponentially better special teams player than Jermaine Whitehead. What I simply mean is that those are the types of guys that are making the roster primarily for their special teams responsibility, and anything else they do is added value. Let's flip over to the offensive side of the ball. And the biggest battle, I think this might be the biggest position battle of any two players on the entire 90-man roster, is Justin McCray and Lucas Patrick. These are two guys that are both playing guard and both playing center. Why is this such a big deal? Well, the Packers only have one true center on the roster, and that's Corey Linsley. Now, Linsley is finally healthy. The hamstring issue that bothered him last year is gone. The ankle injury that preceded and ended up causing the hamstring injury has been surgically repaired. He looks good. He feels good. There's no reason to believe that he is any more injury prone than anybody else that goes into a season healthy. So that's a good thing. But they don't have anything behind him. And when I say they don't have anything behind him, I mean they don't have anything behind him. The number two center right now is Don Barclay, who is obviously a converted guard and tackle. He's played everything here for the Packers. Barclay, of course, got hurt in the very first exhibition game. He has not been seen on the practice field since, and we saw him earlier this week with his ankle in a boot. So that is not a good sign for somebody that you're counting on to be your number two center and a key backup lineman with the regular season only 15, 16 days away. So then you talk about who is your third and fourth center. Well, right now it's Lucas Patrick and McCray really going head-to-head for this. You know, there are different types of players. McCray, as my colleague Tom Silverstein said, I think it was on yesterday's podcast, he plays with a little nastiness. You know, you look at him, he doesn't have a great body. You know, it's a guy that has a traditional background coming from the Arena League. But he plays hard. He plays feisty. And I've seen him take some big-time hits in camp and get back up to the huddle and go again. Lucas Patrick is more of your traditional technician in that he's a guy that was on the practice squad last year. He's learned the way that offensive line coach James Campen wants things done. And he's just a guy that is tough, is a grinder, and can play three positions for you, you know, left guard, center, and right guard. Now, I really don't know how to handicap that competition. Like I said, I think it is the single closest battle of anybody on the 53-man roster right now because they need a backup center if Barkley's not ready for week one, and it's got to be one of those guys unless they just want to go with Lindsley, but I don't think you can do that. So I think one of those guys at least is going to make the team. Maybe they both do, but the number two center thing is a huge deal. And, you know, the starters are going to play a big chunk of the game, as I said, but it's going to be McCray and Patrick playing essentially the entire second half and maybe even a little bit of the second quarter. So this is an enormous chance for them to go against a very, very good defense, even when you talk about the second stringers. And that's going to be a big plus for whichever guy can really step forward in this game heading into the final week of training camp. You know, that would be just a nice feather in the cap to have if you're McCray or you're Patrick and you stepped forward and played better than the other guy in what is the most important of the exhibition games. The last two guys I'm going to mention, they're in competition too. It's at the wide receiver position. I'm talking about Max McCaffrey and fifth round pick D'Angelo Yancey. So let's start with Yancey. Now, I think that inherently, Yancey gets a significant advantage because he was a draft pick. And as everybody knows, Ted Thompson covets draft picks the way that I covet late games on a Sunday so that I can watch English Premier League Sunday morning before going to Lambeau Field. It's a big deal to Ted that he decided to invest in somebody with a draft pick. And Yancey was a fifth. It's not like he was a sixth or a seventh. It's hard to cut fifth-round picks unless they're really, really, really bad in camp. And Yancey's been solid. I don't think he's been good or great. I think he's been okay. He's come on strong lately. He's battled through a little injury. But I think Max McCaffrey's played better. What does that mean in the big scheme of things? Well, McCaffrey is a guy that was an undrafted free agent, spent last year, at least the tail end of last year, on the practice squad, got promoted to the 53-man roster before the NFC Championship game, and he's looked great in training camp. He catches everything. He started to show some value as a punt returner. I just don't know if Thompson will cut a fifth-round pick in favor of McCaffrey if that's a situation that arises on the final day when they're making these cuts. As Tom Silverstein and I said earlier, we have seven receivers making the 53 right now. We have Nelson, Adams, Cobb, Janis, Davis, Allison, and Yancey. There's your seven. Now, I know that Geronimo Allison has a suspension. He's not available for week one, but I think that by week two, the Packers will either have seven receivers on the 53, or maybe at that point they make the choice to cut a McCaffrey or cut a Yancey or cut a Dupree if he somehow works his way into the discussion, and then you re-sign that player immediately to the practice squad. But at the end of the day, I think that Yancey has shown the ability to be a little bit of a big play guy. He's made a lot of deep plays down the field in practice, and in that first exhibition game against Philadelphia, he looked pretty good. And I just think the fact that he's a fifth-round pick is going to make it really hard for Ted Thompson to cut him. And I don't think there's any chance that he keeps eight receivers. I think it's Yancey and McCaffrey really battling, and Dupree, I think, ends up on the practice squad. So that's sort of how I see the wide receiver position shaking out. Again, these are just one man's opinion. We have no idea how it's going to play out because only Ted knows. He's the one that makes the final decisions, and he is as stoic, as guarded, as reserved, as protective of any information that he has when it comes to his weekly press conferences during training camp. Perfect example was yesterday. He was asked if he can see the lights turning on a little bit for these rookie running backs, if he can see them making strides, looking more comfortable. And Ted said, oh, well, I can't say that. And the person who asked the question, Rob Domofsky from ESPN, said back to him, well, sure you can. You could say that if you wanted to. And Ted said back, you're right, I could. And he didn't, because he is very protective. He likes to keep things close to the vest. It's worked for him for 13 years, and he's going to keep doing it. So, like I said, it's anybody's guess as to how these things shake out. But all those players I just mentioned on offense and defense, those are guys that I'm really eager to see Saturday night, because I think this is a huge proving ground for all of them and could go a long way toward either cementing or losing a spot on the 53-man roster. So check all that out on Saturday. There'll be tons of coverage on JS Online and PackersNews.com late Saturday and early Sunday. And then, of course, we'll bring you through the next week with the final exhibition game and cut day right around the corner. So training camp is wrapping up quickly. There's one more public practice, and the regular season is right around the corner. My name is Michael Cohen. Thank you very much for listening to the Packers podcast. I hope all of you have a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday.